Can you explain why private property rights are an essential part of your heritage of freedom? You'll be able to after today's principles and policies. Hello, I'm Chuck Michaelis, the Vice Chairman of the Institute for Principled Policy and the Executive Director of Camp America. Today on Principles and Policies, we are doing another of our series on classes taught at Camp American. As usual, we're doing this both as an educational service for you and as a promotional for Camp American. That's right, we'd like you to come to camp. Not because we make any large sackfuls of money on it. It actually costs us a lot of money. But we want to pass along the principles that you're going to be learning in today's show in a much more compact form during our week-long Camp American. Camp American, as I stated, is a one-week-long summer camp where people like Barry Sheets, myself, Pastor David Whitney, Dr. Michael Kaufman, Larry Pratt of Gun Owners of America, and a host of other great teachers and leaders in the area of principled liberty get together to teach the principles and practical applications of what is being taught to the next generation and in many cases to their parents. That's right. You can come to Camp American with your children. You can find out a lot more about Camp American at our website, www.campamerican.com. You can find out what it costs, where it is, how far away it is, what kind of opportunities are available, the type of recreation that we do. That's right. We aren't just an educational group. We do a lot of recreation. There's lots of fun things to do. Putt-putt, golf, skiing, tubing, boating, swimming, the usual summer camp recreation opportunities are available at Camp American, and we're proud to present those things, and part of the tuition cost covers those items. And as usual, we are a 501c3 operation, which means we are a tax-exempt educational organization. And if you like what we do and you'd like to see it continue, we can take a tax-deductible donation because we are a 501c3 group. You can donate online at www.campamerican.com. That's www.campamerican.com. Don't go to campamerica.com. That will get you to a camping supply company, which we are not affiliated with, and which would be very helpful for the things you may need to bring to camp. But it will do you no good to get to us. Again, if you want to find out anything more about camp, have any questions, want to contact us, www.campamerican.com. This week on Principles and Policies, I'm your host again. Barry is normally the co-host. He is taking a well-deserved Saturday off. He's been very busy. And we are doing these promotionals for Camp American, which gives him an opportunity to catch up on his professional life rather than just spend all his time doing radio shows, which if you've heard the show, you know, we don't spend all that much time on it. I think many of our fans and many of the people who don't like us might agree with that. Today, we're going to hear a class taught by Tom DeWeese. And as you know, we have run programs taught by Tom DeWeese before. We've interviewed Tom. Tom is an important player in the freedom movement. He is the president of the American Policy Center. He is a native originally of Central Ohio, although he now lives in Virginia to be closer to the action in Washington, D.C. But, of course, he's made sure that he's not too close so he doesn't become corrupted by the nonsense that goes in Washington, D.C. He's a safe distance away, but he can get there in a short amount of time, much shorter than we can from Central Ohio. But Tom is a native of Central Ohio, having been raised in Newark and graduating from Newark High School. And Tom does come back from time to time. He does engagements here. He does talks here. I think Tom may be coming in for the We the People Conference, which is being held at the Ohio State Fairgrounds, June 29th and 30th. And make sure if you are going to the We the People Conference that you get a hold of We the People and make sure that they know that you would like Tom DeWeese to come. And that you want to sign up for one of his sessions, because you're going to hear just a teaser here on today's show. Tom has a lot more to teach than just what you hear here. Tom's been a liberty activist and teacher for more than 40 years. He is currently concentrating on the dangers to liberty stemming from the sustainable development movement, which is an outgrowth of the UN's Agenda 21 initiative, which is in fact a direct attack on the concept of personal liberty and private property, the two basic elements of human freedom. And if you don't believe that, listen to this lecture. You will, I hope, come away convinced. Tom's teaching style is very direct and it's very simple, and I think you'll get a lot out of this. In this presentation, Tom gives a lecture on property rights and personal freedom with practical and easy to understand examples. That's kind of a key to getting the word out there, especially to the next generation. We think you'll find that Tom DeWeese is an excellent teacher and will understand why he is a frequent teacher at Camp American. He's one of our teachers this year. Tom's coming in this year and he's teaching three classes. This practical presentation is an explanation of the basics of private property rights based on personal liberty. Right up front, I want to apologize for the audio in the first 20 minutes or so of this recording. It's caused by a malfunctioning lapel mic. It's understandable, but it's a little distorted. So please bear with us for about the first 20 minutes. We switch mics at about 20 minutes in, which makes a world of difference in the recording. Without further explanation, here's Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center teaching the principles of private property rights based on our individual liberty.
All right. Time for morning madness. I'm going to talk about property rights, but I'm going to do it kind of this way. I want to talk about freedom, because property, ownership, and freedom are two inseparable things. And we talk about, you hear the word freedom all the time. Everybody uses freedom. Every side of the political spectrum uses freedom. It's the most overused word in America, or probably in the world. People who advocate oppression use the word freedom. When Fidel Castro took over Cuba, he was a freedom fighter. What they were talking about really was, it was freedom to take somebody else's property. That's what they were talking about. So we have to understand what this word freedom is, in order to understand what your rights are and why we have those rights and why we have a government that we have in this country versus other countries and so forth. And so we have to understand what freedom is, and then how do you get freedom? The freedom really is your ability to live your life as you choose, a life as one of one's own, making decisions for yourself. You all have wants and needs and things that you really care about, and you want to live your life that way. How many of you are planning to go to college? You get older. Why? Anybody? Why are you planning to go to college? Yeah. I'm sorry, what?
I'd like to be an officer in the Marines.
So you have a goal, something you want to do. That's a passion that you have. And you don't want me to tell you you can't do that, do you? Freedom is the choice to decide that. And that's why you have those goals. That's what you want to do with them. Now, we have really in this world, there are two kinds of worlds. We have freedom and prosperity, and we have dictatorships and poverty. They go hand in hand. There really isn't anything else in the world. That's it. Freedom has prosperity, dictatorships that have poverty. You have to ask yourself why that's true. There are people who believe that freedom is chaos, that there is no connection, there's no order to freedom. That people, all these people, everybody in the world, we got 230 million people or so in this, almost 300 million people in this country, and all of them going off in their own directions. People think that's chaos, and there's no order to it. And there's a very compelling argument to make to have government control our actions, then we have a well-ordered society. We have security. I just came through the airport today, or yesterday, and there was lots of order there. They don't tolerate chaos at the airport. They watch everything you do as you go through the security and to get on the airplane. They don't want you doing individual acts. So a lot of people feel very safe about that. They feel that if they have somebody there in a uniform telling them where they should go, what they should do, that's safety. They're safe to get on that airplane. They feel good about it. And they don't care. They've made this comment. I would rather give up some of my security or some of my freedom if it means I'm going to have security when I fly on the airplane or when I go somewhere else. And people are extending this to all kinds of places. We just went through an economic meltdown from last fall to now. Our economy went in an absolute nosedive. And a lot of people are saying the reason for that is because a free market, free enterprise, is chaos. And that caused it all. And that we needed government to come in and put order into everything. And so we take the chaos out and we put order in. We have freedom versus a collective society. And everything's well ordered. Now, let's talk about, when we talk about freedom, people say, I believe in the principles of freedom. Well, what are the principles of freedom? Well, actually, when you're talking about principles, such as this, principles aren't legislated or invented. Government doesn't pass a law and say, here is freedom. Freedom exists, whether you know it or not. It's kind of like the principles of physics. People for centuries lived in very primitive societies, and they didn't understand anything about science. They were just living. So, but they were still bound by the principles of physics. Two people couldn't fill one space at the same time. You couldn't walk through a closed door. You couldn't leap off the earth because of gravity. It's the principles of physics. They were subjected to them whether they knew it or not. The same thing is true about the principles of freedom. You don't invent them. You don't legislate them. Principles are discovered. And the principles of freedom are there whether you know it or not. And if you have the principles of freedom, if you operate under the principles of freedom, then you have prosperity. You have a society of being able to do and live your life as you choose. There are three principles of freedom. The three principles of freedom are individualism, private property ownership, and free enterprise. If you ignore any one of these, if you leave any one of them out, then you get poverty, stagnation, and political tyranny. Individualism, private property right, ownership, and free enterprise. Now, if you go through those, individualism is you. It is your personal choices. It is your hopes, your wants, your dreams, living your life as you choose. Private property ownership, we're going to talk quite a bit about that as we get along here. And free enterprise is lots of individuals operating among themselves, selling, buying, creating everything we have in our society. Why is it that the United States of America is the richest nation on earth, and why is it that there is massive poverty throughout the world? One of the main reasons for that, actually the reason for it, is because we have individualism, we have private property ownership, and we have free enterprise, and other countries don't. Let me give you the... When you talk about people who want a collective society, when they want to have that control, what is it that they're looking for? What is their mindset that they want to have the control? If I can find the quote I'm looking for, life is good. Oh, here it is. I put it on top so I'd find it. You may have heard this before, and I've used it here before. This is the mindset of the people who want a collective society, the people who do not want the responsibilities of being individuals, the people who look at all the world as just one big group hug, one big global village. You've heard these terms. See if you recognize this quote. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger, a brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. Now you may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one. I should have had you all do this as I went through, you know. Kumbaya. Yeah. Brotherhood of man. What John Lennon is really saying in that is that, you have no possessions whatsoever. You just all live out in the field. There's no roof over your head. You kind of lay there on the ground and graze like a dumb, stupid, fat cow. That's basically what he's saying there. And but these are images. The way they sell this collective society to us is through a lot of images of just love and compassion. And they sell a free society as one of greed and selfishness. And you've seen this today and everywhere we turn. But if you have nobody working, if you have no possessions, if you're all just laying out in the field grazing, who gathers the food? Who puts the roof over your head? Who puts clothes on your back? Who creates the cars so we can have transportation and get somewhere? We're talking about nothing more than just buffalo, you know, walking across the plains, reducing man to that image. What happens in a collective society is that we eliminate choice. We eliminate any kind of risk. We eliminate challenges. We make life pretty boring, frankly. Collective society is anti-individual. Of course, there's no private property rights. There's interference and control by the government. And everything is done for the common good. We have security. We have order. This is the Obama doctrine. The Obama doctrine says, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. What we're talking about is a world of redistribution of wealth. Away from this person, over to this person. Let me ask you a question. What I'd like you to do, how many of you have, right now, no money in your pockets? Stand up. Those of you who don't have any money. No money. Okay. Now, I happen to know that back here there's a little store with all kinds of goodies in it. Candy bars and potato chips and all those kind of things. How do any of you expect to get any of that? Got a plan?
Ask Dad.
That's the Obama doctrine. Okay. Now, keep standing. Billy, I told you I was going to pick on you. Come up here a second. Now, Billy is not only my step-grandson, but he is also a very ambitious young man. Age of 16, you got your first job, right? Mm-hmm. Why?
Because I wanted money.
You wanted money. What did you want to do with the money?
Use it for whatever I wanted.
You want a car?
Car.
Now, you just graduated from high school on Friday. Now, you're looking to get a place of your own sometime soon? Something you want to do? You want to buy some clothes, maybe take some trips, things like that? Those are things you want to do. Now, Billy has a job. You have money in your pocket?
No.
But that's just because you didn't bring it, right? If any of you fit in that category, you just didn't bring it, you can sit down. Now, wait a minute. Okay. All right, this is not working as planned. Now, if I may ask you, you work at Walmart.
Yes.
What was your last paycheck?
$450.
$450. Is that before or after taxes? That's after taxes. What did you really earn?
Almost $500.
$500. So they took about $100 out of your check before you got it. But still, $400, that's a lot of money. Now, the fact of the matter is that Billy could take us all out for ice cream, all of us, and pay for it, couldn't he? Y'all want ice cream? Y'all want to do that? Take us all off. Now, here's the thing. He keeps his money in his pocket. That's just for him. That makes him happy. But what about all of you? You don't have that money. But if Billy takes his money and takes you all out for ice cream, you're all happy, aren't you? Isn't it better for society that everybody's happy instead of just one selfish guy who wants to keep it all for himself? Does anybody disagree? Yeah. Exactly. Now, would you do something else for me? You see that thing right over there that says water on it? Would you fill one of those white cups with some of that and bring it to me? Thank you. Now, the problem with the plan for him to take his paycheck and take all of us out for ice cream is that come tomorrow, thank you. Oh, that's good, thank you. Come tomorrow, you won't have any ice cream. You want some more. Billy, take some more of your check. You're going to take us out and get some more ice cream. And tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow, that's what we're going to do. Because it's for the common good. We're all happy, except Billy. Because Billy has plans, he has goals, he has dreams. And that is being taken away from him to help the collective. He's already lost $100 to the government at this point. Now we want to take some more. And what's going to happen eventually when he catches on to this game? What are you going to do?
I'm not going to pay anymore. I'm going that way.
You're going to stop working, aren't you? You're going to go join them. Now something buy you ice cream. Right? Okay. I appreciate it. That's it. This is what is happening throughout the world. We have in this world massive poverty. And the answer is redistribution of the wealth to take from Billy to give to everybody else. Pretty soon there are fewer Billys. Poverty grows. These are some of these statistics that we're dealing with on this. There are 1.2 billion people in the world living in poverty. There are 50,000 deaths per day from poverty. 10 million children die of hunger and preventable diseases. More than half the population lives on less than $2 a day. 800 million go to bed every night hungry. Why? I will tell you. Bad government. That's the reason. Governments who live for the collective, governments who take from everyone, all for the common good. No one has the ability to climb out of it. Because there's a flip side to this. Now, first of all, we have those people who want to live off of somebody else. But you also have, and this is even a greater group, a much greater group, who live in poverty because they're kept that way. They're kept in poverty. And we have huge operations in this world to help poverty. The United States puts billions of dollars not only into foreign aid to send to foreign countries, but it also puts billions of dollars into what we call the welfare program for people right here in this country. Now, literally, over the years, if you would take all of that money that we have spent for all that instead of putting it into government aid programs, if you had handed people this money, you could have given $1 million to just about everybody in the world. They'd all be millionaires. And we wouldn't need all these poverty programs. But you know what would happen at that point? If we gave everybody in this room $1 million, and you think you're set for life, except one little group, probably the guys right back here, would all head to Las Vegas, try to double it, and promptly lose it. Other people would say, I don't have to do anything the rest of my life. I'm going to lay here on the couch eating bonbons and watch television until they've eaten all their $1 million up, and they're poor. You have some people who would try to save it. You have some people who try to invest it. Those people would be able to live that dream that we all thought we could do. But this is what happens in the world. People are all different. And for government to take away from these people who are prosperous people, who are working, who are earning, who are creating money, because wealth, before it can be stolen by government, has to first be earned. So before all that, after all that happens, you're going to throw it out there and people are going to throw it away. It's going to be wasted. You have huge numbers of charitable organizations in the world who have made a living out of helping the poor. And you see these TV shows, these commercials. Help little Johnny for just $2 a day. He can eat and he can have this and all this. Here is this bureaucracy in the middle. The United Nations, other operations, some of them are private bureaucracies, who take at least half that money before it ever gets, because they're doing good, because so they've got to use that money to do some more good, and oh yeah, this little bit trickles down here. What you end up with is a world in which certain people are put on lifelong breadlines for the rest of their lives. This is what we have deemed the moral thing to do. We feel good about it. We're going to give them money. We're going to throw this money at them. And they're going to be in these lifelong breadlines the rest of life. What about their hopes? What about their dreams? What about what they want to accomplish? We don't care because we're feeling too good about helping them. We don't want them to get out of poverty. That would take away half of our satisfaction. There are people who think this way. The other thing is, as I said, bad government. Back in the 1980s, there was an operation. A lot of folks in the music business, Michael Jackson and Bruce Springsteen and the Pointer Sisters and several other people came together and they created a thing called U.S. Aid for Africa. There were people in Africa who were starving, horrible, horrible conditions they were living under, and they wanted to create a way to raise money for them and to help them. And so they created
USAID for Africa, and they did a song. You probably remember it. Mary, maybe you've heard of it. We are the world. You know, we are the world. We are the children. We all want to help, you know, make a brighter day, you know. And they raised millions of dollars. And they bought food. And they shipped it to Ethiopia. This was the focus, where it was going to go. Not a single morsel of that food landed in the hands of the poor and the hungry. Ethiopia is a communist country. The food was put on the dock. The communist thugs of Ethiopia took what they wanted and gave to their buddies, and the rest sat and rotted on the dock. Now, that's what happens in a great number of times with charitable things. They pull at our heartstrings. They tell us how these people need to have this help, and this is what happens. The poor remain poor. The question is, why? What happens to all that aid that we send over? Well, USA for Africa is an example. Dictators all over the world. The United States sends this food, sends this aid, or in most of the cases, we just send a check to the government of the country. The government is corrupt. Why do you think all these dictators always have so much money in all these poor little countries? Because they're corrupt. The reason, and we have this situation where, as I just demonstrated with Billy, that everybody's taking from him, and he's propping it up. Eventually, he runs out of money, and this is redistribution of the wealth. It's just thrown away. Didn't get to have his hopes and dreams, and neither do you, because eventually that's all going to go away. These governments that keep people down, they do it deliberately. There is a gentleman by the name of Hernando de Soto who is working to change this. He is an economist from Peru. He wrote a book called The Mystery of Capital, Why It Works in the West and Nowhere Else. Why is the United States the richest nation on earth? I've been an advocate of private property rights my whole life. But when I read his book, suddenly revelation took place. I suddenly understood why we're so rich. You've got corporations that go into these poor countries and they are trying to create jobs, they are trying to do these kinds of things. It's great to have a job, it's great to do that, but it will not solve the poverty problem. The reason these people are poor throughout the world is because they are banned from owning private property. Now, why is that so important? Because the only way to build wealth is through property. You buy a piece of property, you own it. First of all, in most cases, its value goes up over time. That's called equity, and you gain wealth from that. The other thing is that you can take loans against it and get other things that you want. For example, more than 60% of all the people in the United States are employed by small private businesses, not big, huge corporations, small private businesses. How did those small private businesses get started? They took their private property and they took out a loan and they used it to start their business. And then they created jobs and helped other people earn money so that they could buy property so that they could create wealth. And that's how the United States got so rich. Now, what's different? There are people who own property in other countries. Here's the difference. In the United States, every single piece of property, whether it is a land, your house that's sitting on it, or a big piece of equipment, if maybe you have a big corporation, a big printing company or something like that, a big piece of equipment, that's property that you own, and it's registered. It's placed down at the courthouse, the records office, where every bit of this property is recorded. And so that you can prove that it's yours. And the fact that you can prove that it's yours is what gives the bank the ability to give you a loan on it. Would you believe that the United States of America is one of the only places on earth where that system exists? You go into Mexico and you want to buy private property. It takes you 25 years and probably 100 bureaucratic hands to pass money over to get your property registered in your name. If you go into the Philippines, if you want to own your home there, you have to, first of all, form an association with all of your neighbors. And they all have to approve of it. It's something like 56 steps you have to go through in order to own the property. It takes years. Hernando de Soto, in his own country of Peru, had his own team of experts. And these were people who knew what they were doing, wanted to start a business. And so they went through all the steps it took in Peru to start a business. Now here, I've started several businesses. I started my first business with a loan of $100 from my mother so that I could rent my first office. I did that when I was 21. And I built a business that eventually I sold for several thousand dollars. That was that easy. That was it. Done. You have to register, with a county, so that your trademark is registered and you've got to pay taxes on it. But that's it. You can start a business in this country in 20 minutes. Peru, it took him over 18 months. He had to, pay over $1,200 in fees. This is a euphemism for slathering a little cash on the hand of every bureaucrat. Oh, man, you need some money. Yeah. There you go. So, $1,200 in a poor country like Peru is prohibitive for anybody else to start a business. If you're poor, if you're making $2 a day, how long is it going to take you to save $1,200 to start your business? It ain't going to happen. That's what's happening. All of these countries, people live in underground economies. They have property, but they don't have any ownership to it. They can't use it to raise equity that they can start businesses with, and so they live in poverty. Hernando de Soto told me that he is an international phenomenon. There are more than 50 heads of state, heads of countries, even Muammar Gaddafi is one of them, who want to meet with Hernando de Soto to say, please tell me how to end this poverty in my country. And they want to know, and he goes around and meets with them, but the problem is they don't want to hear his solution. Let them have private property. Oh, no, man, we can't do that. Here's what the excuses they always use. Our people are not educated. They don't understand the concept of private property. So big brother, daddy government's got to take care of them. Don't you understand? It's just for compassion, you understand. Well, he told me this story. There was a head of state who had reserved 3 hours to sit down and meet with Hernando de Soto. But Hernando knew that this head of state really was kind of being forced into meeting with him. He didn't really care. He didn't want to talk to him. And he knew what his excuse was going to be. My people just don't understand the concept of private property. So he, before he went to meet with him, he sent a team of his people out in a six-block area around the presidential palace, knocking on doors, asking people the question, excuse me, do you own this property? Now, this is in a country where private property is not allowed. Do you own your home? Do you own this property you're on? Yes, I do. Can you show me what you have to prove that? And in every case, they had something, some kind of documentation. It wasn't official government documentation, but the point of the matter was they understood the concept of private property. This is mine. He gathered up all this evidence, made copies of it, goes to meet with his head of state, and walk in the room, and he says, before we start, I want to show you something. And he puts it down on the table and explains to them what it is. And he says, now don't tell me your people don't understand private property ownership. Now let's move on from there. This is what we're dealing with in the world. Abject poverty for no reason. We are now having massive environmental regulations put on us because there is environmental destruction going on in these very, very poor countries. Well, when you're trying to eat today, you really don't much care whether you've hurt the environment or not. It's only reserved for little rich brats in America who have nothing else to do. And the fact of the matter is, if we solve the problem of poverty through the ownership of private property, what you have done then, instead of you all having to have Billy buy you your ice cream, you will begin to create the ability to buy your own. You will build your own wealth. And once you have done that, the fact that you have built wealth will raise up the economy that will allow somebody else to do the same, and you will have an economy of great wealth. Now, the United States was set up this way. This is the only country on earth that was created with the idea that government should be limited. Our founding fathers created a government that they were afraid of, and so they put all kinds of safeguards in it to make sure that it would stay corralled. Because they knew the bigger the government, the poorer the people. And that's just a fact. Government gets bigger, gets more involved in your life, you lose liberty, you lose income, redistribution of the wealth comes that way. That's a fact. So we set up the government that way. But now government found out that it can raid the treasury. It can take your money. It can buy things with that. It can spend money that isn't its, doesn't belong to it. It belongs to you. Here we are. We have the this whole situation that happened in the last fall. It has been predicted for 25 years or longer that this was going to happen because we had government taking more and more and more, getting bigger, more oppressive. People were getting less and less. Eventually, the teeter falls. And that's what happened. Now we have a president who believes that he can be the chairman of the board of General Motors, having never built a car in his life. And he can decide. I love this. He made the quote, "We will not let the American auto industry fail." Yes. Now that's a man you can believe in. Of course, he has absolutely no clue why the American auto industry failed as the government began to put rules and regulations on the auto industry, making it unable to compete around the world. And, it's amazing. When I was your age, I could buy a car for $2,000. Then along came a great man named Jimmy Carter. I need a drink on that one. And he created all of these programs where massive inflation took place. Your money became worthless or worthless. Some of this was a result of Richard Nixon taking the gold standard, money off the gold standard, so we just had paper money. You know, government is the only entity on earth that can take a valuable commodity like paper, slap ink on both sides of it, and render it worthless. You know, it's called Federal Reserve notes. This is what happened. The money began to become worth less, and suddenly, cars shot up from $2,000 to $12,000 and $14,000. And today, they're $30,000 and $40,000. This is a result of government printing money that has nothing to back it, just flooding the market, and it's worth less. If you have $1 and that's all that exists, then that's worth a lot. If you got $40 trillion of it, it's worth a whole lot less, $40 trillion less. And so you need more of them to buy something. And that's what they've done. Government does not create wealth. And government does not create jobs. People create jobs. A free market creates jobs. But Barack Obama believes that he is the one who's going to create jobs. He is the one who's going to bring us back to wealth. I saw a thing on AOL the other day on the news. One of these brilliant people from Wall Street was saying, how long will it take till we bring the stock market back to 14,000? Yeah. They don't understand. They have created this.
Just look at how long it took to get the stock market from where it was in 1929 back to where it had been until 1953.
Right. So, you know, this is what we're dealing with, is a government that is so oppressive, so controlling, that property values have plummeted, so we aren't building wealth anymore. We are not following the three principles of freedom: individualism, private property ownership, private enterprise. We have dumped all three of those principles, and we are going more towards a collective. What is happening in our country? What do you feel happening? You all feel, I'm sure, that something is happening. Do you feel that we are on our way to something good or something bad? You feel that? Do you really feel it? The reason the bigger government has gotten, the more programs government has created, the unhappier we've gotten. Because we're no longer able to choose our own life. We are having government dictate what kind of job we have. We'll eventually have it dictating how big our family can be, what kind of house we can live in. They're trying to get us out of our cars. They have decided that we cannot have these horrible cars. We've got to all be in public transportation. I've been, in the last 3 weeks, in every kind of public transportation that exists. I just got off an airplane. A couple weeks ago, I was on a train, an Amtrak train, for 12 hours. And I had my own little car. It was really an exciting little thing here. I had my own little, or not a car, my own little room with a bed in it. This was an amazing thing. This room was the size of a bathtub, and it had two bunks in it. And the beds were, about this wide, and it had a little pull-down sink. And I don't know how in the world two people had ever gotten into this thing, but it was just me in it. And then the tracks are in such bad shape that if you can picture sitting in a bathtub with these two bunks in it and then shaking it back and forth like this, you get the picture what it was like for 12 hours. I was laying in this thing, and it would wham me against the side of the wall, and the door rattled constantly, and this was public transportation. In D.C., we have the metro, the subway system. In all these cases, have you guys seen that commercial with the vacuum cleaner I love these because this guy's an inventor. He makes these things up, and he says, it occurred to me that if you have a vacuum cleaner that has wheels that all go in the same direction, you can only go this way, but if you put it on a ball, you can go anywhere you want to go. Transportation is the old-fashioned vacuum cleaner. It only goes here and goes there. Your car is the ball. You can go wherever you want to go. Public transportation is a hole. It is taking you in places where it wants to take you, not where you want to go. And you have to make it kind of work for you. There is nothing pleasant about public transportation. But this is what we're being told today. Get people out of their cars and get it more in public transportation. That'll help the environment. It will not. But that's what they tell you. I could do another 3 hours on the environment, but I won't. 10 minutes?
10.
Okay. Let me share this with you. I know I've been kind of jumping around. There's so many details with all this, but private property ownership is the key to wealth, is the key to prosperity, is the key to happiness. George Washington said, private property and freedom are inseparable. Our founding fathers created this nation with the idea that 99% of this land would be owned by private ownership. And today we have a country in which entire states, Montana, Nevada, Alaska's a big one. They own the government owns 90% of it. We're locking away our natural resources. We're taking away our wealth. We have an environmental movement that says we reject the idea of private property. That was by Peter Burley from the National Audubon Society. Maurice Strong, my favorite villain of all time, who was the head of the UN's Earth Summit and the number two man at the United Nations. This man, I have deemed him the most dangerous man in the world. He said, and this gives you an idea where this country is going, isn't the only hope for the planet that the industrialized civilizations collapse? Isn't it our responsibility to bring that about? Our is the United Nations. That's what he wants to have happen. And isn't that what's happening? GM and Chrysler have collapsed. That is a major part of the industrialized world. While we are sitting here right now with all this economic meltdown, with all this trouble we have in the auto industry and in the trouble it's in, here's some facts for you. American people actually want to buy American cars, but one of the reasons they don't, this is according to a survey that was taken, one of the reasons that they don't is because they're afraid of the unstable gasoline prices. Prices go up, prices go down, and mostly go up. And they're going up right now. And so they're afraid to buy these cars. And if we were allowed to drill American oil for Americans, we would gain a stable oil price. We would save Detroit just on its own without any government programs to do it. We would no longer be dependent on foreign oil. We would stop putting money in the pockets of terrorists who hate us. It would solve literally all of our problems by drilling American oil for Americans. There is a Senator Rahal from West Virginia who's in charge of one of the main committees in the Senate, who has just now worked to, first of all, raise the price of the oil leases on federal land to the oil companies and shorten the lease time from 10 years to 5 years. The man is going in exactly the opposite direction than where we should be going. This is what we're doing to this economy. Barack Obama says, and he and Nancy Pelosi, the two automaking giants of all time, Barack Obama, who has never met a payroll in his life, he's never employed anybody in his life with money that he had to earn, it's always come from government, and Nancy Pelosi, who really, really ought to be barefoot and cooking at home. but they have decided that the auto industry has got to start making cars that are environmentally correct. They want them to be about this big, and they get about 800 miles to the gallon. These don't exist, by the way, but they have deemed they're going to make them. And, back in the 1980s, 90s, I forget which, late 80s, I think it was, Yugoslavia had a wonder car. And this was built by the communist worker of Yugoslavia. This was to show what the worker could do in a socialist society. And they created the Yugo. Yeah. No-go was what we called it, yeah. I wrote an article recently where I said that those who were lucky enough to get it from the showroom floor to their driveway were some of the leading ones in the Yugo. And it was necessary to carry a bucket in the back seat to pick up the parts when you went through a pothole. We have had some inspiring things in this country over the years, some inspiring slogans to move us forward. Remember the Alamo. I regret that I have but one life to lose for my country. Remember the Yugo. I don't think is going to be one of them. But this is what Barack Obama wants to create, a socialist in auto industry with socialist workers who will keep their job even if they, you know, don't put the wheels on the back of the car, if they solder or weld beer cans into the side of it, and that's happened, by the way, where it rattles and you can't find it. They'll keep their job no matter what because it'll become a government job. Let me just leave you with this to give you, bring it all together. This is a legend of success and plunder, and a man, Tom Smith, who squelched world hunger. Now, Smith, an inventor, had specialized in toys, so people were surprised when they found that he, instead of making toys, was baking bread. The way to make bread he'd conceived cost less than people could believe. And not just make it, this device could, in addition, wrap and slice. The price per loaf, one loaf for many, the minuscule sum of under a penny. Can you imagine what this meant? Can you comprehend the consequent? The first time yet, the world well fed, and all because of Tom Smith's bread. A citation from the president for Smith's amazing bread. This and other honors, too, were heaped upon his head. But isn't it a wondrous thing how quickly fame has flown? Smith, the hero of today, tomorrow scarcely known. Yes, the fickle years passed by. Smith was a millionaire, but Smith himself was now forgot, though bread was everywhere. People asked from where it came would very seldom know. They would simply eat and ask, was it not always so? However, Smith cared not one bit, for millions ate his bread, and everything is fine, thought he. I am rich, and they are fed. Everything is fine, he thought. Well, he reckoned not with fate. Note the sequence of events, starting on the date on which the business tax went up. Then, to a slight extent, the price of every loaf rose too, up to 1 full cent. What's going on? The public cried. He's guilty of pure plunder. He has no right to get so rich on other people's hunger. A prize cartoon depicted Smith with fat and drooping jowls, snatching bread from hungry babes, indifferent to their howls. Well, since the public does come first, it could not be denied that in matters of this, the public must decide. So antitrust now took a hand. Of course, it was appalled at what it found was going on. The bread trust, it was called. Now, this was getting serious. So Smith felt that he must have a friendly interview with the men in antitrust. So hat in hand, he went to them. They'd surely been misled. No rule of law had he defied. But then their lawyer said, the rule of law in complex times has proved itself deficient. We much prefer the rule of men. It's vastly more efficient. Now let me state the present rules, the lawyer then went on. These very simple guidelines you can rely upon. You're gouging on your prices if you charge more than the rest, but it's unfair competition if you think you can charge less. A second point we would make to help avoid confusion, don't try to charge the same amount. That would be collusion. Now you must compete, but not too much, for if you do, you see, then the market would be yours, and that's monopoly. Price too high or price too low? Now, which charge did they make? Well, they weren't loath to charging both with public good at stake. In fact, they went one better. They charged monopoly. No muss, no fuss, oh, woe is us. Egad, they charged all three. 5 years in jail, the judge then said. You're lucky it's not worse. Robber barons must be taught. Society comes first. Now bread is baked by government, and as might be expected, everything is well controlled, the public well protected. True, loaves cost a dollar each, but our leaders do their best. The selling price is half a cent. Taxes pay the rest. Thank you.
For more information on this class or this broadcast, you can contact us through our website at www.principledpolicy.com. That's www.principledpolicy.com. The dates for this year's Camp American is June 24th through the 30th. That's Sunday through Saturday, June 24th through 30th, 2012. For more information on Camp American, you can contact us at www.campamerican.com. That's www.campamerican.com. And we would ask you to join us on Monday for another Principles and Policies.